Tell me, Muse, the story of that resourceful man who was driven to wander far and wide after he had sacked the holy citadel of Troy. He saw the cities of many people, and he learned their ways. He suffered great anguish on the high seas in his struggles to preserve his life and bring his comrades home. But he failed to save those comrades, in spite of all his efforts. It was their own transgression that brought them to their doom, for in their folly they devoured the oxen of Hyperion the sun god, and he saw to it that they would never return. Tell us this story, goddess daughter of Zeus, beginning at whatever point you will. Circe, that formidable goddess with the beautiful hair and a woman's voice, sent us the friendly escort of a favorable wind which sprang up from astern and filled the sail of our blue-painted ship. We set the tackle in order, fore and aft, then sat down, and the wind and the helmsman kept her on her course. Then, perturbed in spirit, I addressed my men. "My friends," I said, "it is not right that only one or two of us should know the prophecies that divine Circe has made to me, and I am going to pass them on to you, so that we may all be forewarned, whether we die or escape the worst and save our lives." Her first warning concerned the sirens with their divine song. We must beware of them and give their flowery meadow a wide berth. But she instructed me alone to hear their voices. "You must bind me very tight, standing me up against the step of the mast and lashed to the mast itself so that I cannot stir from the spot. And if I beg and command you to release me, you must tighten and add to my bonds." In this way, I explained every detail to my men. In the meantime, our good ship, with that friendly breeze to drive her, fast approached the Siren's Isle. But now the wind dropped. Some power lulled the waves, and a breathless calm set in. Rising from their seats, my men drew in the sail and threw it into the hold, then sat down at the oars and churned the water white with their blades of polished pine. Meanwhile, I took a large round of wax, cut it up small with my sharp sword, and worked the pieces with all the strength of my fingers. The wax soon grew warm with my vigorous kneading and with the rays of the sun god Hyperion's sun. I took all my men in turn and plugged their ears with it. They then bound me hand and foot, standing me up by the step of the ship's mast, and then lashing me to the mast itself. This done, they sat down once more and struck the grey water with their oars. We made good progress and had just come within call of the shore when the sirens became aware that a ship was bearing down upon them and broke into their high, clear song. "Draw near, illustrious Odysseus, man of many tales, great glory of the Achaeans, and bring your ship to rest so that you may hear our voices. No seaman ever sailed his black ship past this spot without listening to the honey-sweet tones that flow from our lips. And no one who has listened has not been delighted and gone his way a wiser man. For we know all that the Argives and Trojans suffered on the broad plain of Troy by the will of the gods, and we know whatever happens on this fruitful earth." This was the sweet song the sirens sang, and my heart was filled with such a longing to listen that I ordered my men to set me free, gesturing with my eyebrows. But they swung forward over their oars and rowed ahead, while Perimedes and Eurylochus jumped up, tightened my ropes, and added more. However, when they had rowed past the sirens and we could no longer hear the sound and the words of their song, my good companions were quick to clear their ears of the wax I'd used to stop them and to free me from the ropes that bound me. We had no sooner put this island behind us than I saw a cloud of spume ahead and a raging surf and heard the thunder of the breakers. My men were so terrified that the oars all dropped from their grasp and fell with a splash onto the sea. And the ship herself, now that the hands that had pulled the smooth blades were idle, was brought to a standstill. I went up and down the ship, stood by each man, and encouraged them with soothing words. I did not mention the inescapable horror of Scylla, fearing that in their panic, my men might stop rowing and huddle below decks. But now I allowed myself to forget Circe's irksome instruction not to arm myself in any way. I put my famous armor on, seized a couple of long spears, and took my stand on the forecastle deck, hoping from there to get the first view of Scylla, the monster of the rocks, who was preparing disaster for my crew. But I could not catch a glimpse of her anywhere, though I searched the somber face of the cliff in every part till my eyes were tired. Thus we sailed up the straits, wailing in terror, for on the one side we had Scylla, and on the other the awesome Charybdis, sucked down the salt water in her dreadful way. When she vomited it up, she was stirred to her depth and seethed over like a cauldron on a blazing fire, and the spray she flung up rained down on the tops of the crags at either side. But when she swallowed the salt water down, the whole interior of her vortex was exposed. The rocks re-echoed to her fearful roar, and the dark blue sands of the seabed were exposed. My men turned pale with terror, and now, while all eyes were on Charybdis as the quarter from which we looked for disaster, Scylla snatched out of my ship the six strongest and ablest men. Glancing towards my ship, looking for my comrades, I saw their arms and legs dangling high in the air above my head. "Odysseus!" they called out to me in their anguish. But it was the last time they used my name. For like an angler on a jutting point, who casts his bait to lure the little fishes below, dangles his long rod with its line protected by an oxhorn pipe, gets a bite and whips his struggling catch to land, Scylla had whisked my comrades struggling up to the rocks. There she devoured them at her own door, shrieking and stretching out their hands to me in their last desperate throes. In all I have gone through, as I explored the pathways of the seas, I have never had to witness a more pitiable sight than that. When we had left the island astern, and no other land or anything but sky and water was to be seen, Zeus brought a somber cloud to rest above the hollow ship so that the sea was darkened by its shadow. Before she had run very far, a howling wind suddenly sprang up from the west and hit us with hurricane force. The squall snapped both forestays simultaneously. As the mast toppled, all the rigging tumbled into the hold, and the mast itself, reaching the stern, struck the helmsman on the head and smashed in all the bones of his skull. He plunged like a diver from the deck, and his brave soul left his body. Then, at one and the same moment, Zeus thundered and struck the vessel with lightning. The whole ship reeled from the blow of his bolt and was filled with the smell of sulfur. My men were flung overboard, and round the black hull they floated like seagulls on the waves. There was no homecoming for them. The god saw to that. All through the night I was swept along, and at sunrise found myself back at Scylla's rock and that appalling whirlpool. Charybdis was beginning to suck the salt water down, but as she did so, I swung myself up to the great fig tree, on which I got a tight grip and clung like a bat. Then, at last, the timbers reappeared on the surface. I let go and dropped with sprawling hands and feet to splash into the water clear of the great logs. I clambered onto them and paddled along with my hands. And thanks to the Father of Men and Gods, Scylla did not catch sight of me. Otherwise, nothing could have saved me from certain death. 9 days of drifting followed, but in the night of the 10th, the gods washed me up on the island of Ægidia, the home of Calypso, of the braided tresses, that formidable goddess with a woman's voice. And she received me kindly and looked after me.